Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Special guest for you today, as always, really special guest. But we have Helen Clitheroe on, who has just probably had, well, you've had a very, very successful British Championships, most successful champs to date. Walk away with four medals and two golds in that tally. So, Helen, I mean, it couldn't have gone much better, could it?
No. Thanks for having me on the pod. Yeah, it was a really good weekend. Obviously, last year we had a pretty good half hour with Elise and Hannah. And it was a similar format this year, but yeah, to have Westy come back and, you know, get on the podium after having such a tough time away, and then Eloise Walker also getting on the podium was just topped it off, really. It was great.
Yeah, I think definitely Eloise, like, was that, did that feel like a bit of a breakthrough for her, knowing that she can do that? I mean, she's always been capable, but knowing she can sort of go get that medal, be on the podium, close that gap between her and Hannah, her training partner.
Yeah, I mean, she's had a really good indoor season. So we knew the times were sort of coming down a little bit. And I'm sure she won't mind me saying that that's probably the best sort of tactical race that she's run that I've watched her do, in terms of just staying calm and keeping her, you know, saving her kick till the end and not wasting energy. So, you know, I was delighted with how she ran that. It was a great race from her.
How do you prepare two athletes in the same race? Obviously, Hannah probably has a slightly different objective for that race than Eloise, or maybe not.
I suppose I always look at all the athletes individually anyway. So you're sort of just looking at what they're trying to get out of the race. And it's sometimes when you're in the position as a coach to suddenly have a couple of people in the same race who are training partners, you have to sort of work out how to manage that and how to speak to each person, I suppose. But I just try and look at it as an individual, like, what's your best tactic and what do you think you need to do to do well in this race? So that's what I do. And hopefully that works in terms of just sort of mentally preparing for what tactics they might need to do in the race.
Mm. Well, and on tactics, someone who's got the tactics right for the last, if you include indoors, what, five championships? Is Hannah mm-hmm. Nuttall one that she's got five British titles now in the last two or three years?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, the prep going into this race has not been smooth at all. I know Hannah spoke out about it a little bit. And it's probably one of the races that's been more controlled. I mean, I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, probably the first champs that she won, when it was just like she was quite far back and had an amazing last probably 800 when it was at Manchester and just dipped Verity Ockenden on the line. You know, there was some heart-stopping moments in some of them champs that she won, whereas this one I felt was, you know, it was a tough race and it's made it, you know, an honest race. But Hannah just looked very comfortable and controlled the whole time. And it was never in doubt for me that she would be able to kick away. And that was the sort of ideal scenario, really, for her going into that race. You know, it's what we thought might happen. And it did happen in terms of who went to the front and stuff.
Yeah, honestly, she's racking up so many British titles and just good performances. I think that eighth at the Worlds last year was probably one of the most sort of underrated performances from a British athlete. Mm. I don't know if you agree with that, just being in that 5K field, making that final and then finishing eighth.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, just making the final is tough enough at World Champs level. And the race, again, was, you know, it suited Hannah, how she runs. She's got a very good wind-up. Always, you know, so always can do a pretty good last K. You know, it's very exciting to watch, you know, from my point of view. I was sat with her mum in the stands, and her mum, you know, obviously, was an amazing athlete herself. And, you know, it was just perfect for Hannah. And, you know, just think that sort of race gives her the belief that she's, you know, can be competitive in a world championship or global championship race, because often they are run like that, you know, where they're not all out sort of from the gun, they're wind up style races. So it was a great chance for us as well, you know, to get Hannah, Andrew and Elise all making the finals in Tokyo was brilliant.
You are killing it. Yeah, that group is. Yeah, you are really, you know, and I think, is it fair to say that perhaps there were a few people, there was a few skeptics out there early, you know, when we spoke back in almost 3 years ago now, I was looking back 3 years ago, 2023, at the end of 2023, I think there was definitely a few skeptics. You've had a bit of a roller coaster. But actually, you look at what you've achieved with those athletes that you've got. It's been an incredible journey.
Yeah, and you know, it's not been a smooth ride the whole way, but I think, like, when I spoke to you and I'd not long started the job, and it was a group of athletes who probably didn't choose for me to be their coach, and now I've got a group of athletes who I hope choose for me to be their coach, and it's sort of, I guess, that buy-in, you know, that's no disrespect to anyone who chose to go elsewhere or anything, that's absolutely fine. And as a coach and a former athlete, I totally understand that, and I think it's important that people are happy and in the right place with the right people who they, you know, as a coach, you know, you want someone to trust what you're doing, trust what you're setting in training, have a good relationship with you. So, you know, that's sort of developed with the athletes that I have now, and, you know, that seems to, we have good relationships, and it seems to be working on and off the training and racing sort of ground. So happy days.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, and you pitched it there. I mean, it's a very strange circumstance, isn't it? That, you know, usually in this sport, an athlete will approach a coach. And so it'll be in the coach. It'll be the coach's decision whether they choose to take the athlete on or not. And the athlete will have, you know, sort of full belief they seeked out that coach. Whereas, yeah, it was the other way around for you. How long did that buy-in process take?
I don't, you'd have to ask them that. I think
from your perspective, when was it you were like, actually,
I felt like a few of them were sort of with me straight away. And then obviously, like someone like Hannah, I was part of recruiting Hannah. So she came to the team because she wanted to be coached by me. Mm. And then, you know, beyond that, anyone that we've sort of recruited, I've been part of that process. So I think that helped, you know, like the people that have stayed on the team, let's say, have chose either I've wanted to coach them or they've wanted me to coach them. Mm. And obviously the setup we have is excellent in terms of support that they get, you know, from New Balance. So, you know, I'm very lucky as a coach to have, you know, the ability for us to go on camps and me to go on the camp, and that to be sort of funded by New Balance. And I think that's one of the major reasons for our success is the sort of infrastructure we have around the group. You know, we have massage therapists that they see every week that comes to see them at the house, you know, great physio input. The camps, I think, are massive. The altitude training that we do, we spend quite a lot of time away. I think that's been a massive part of the success and the way these athletes have built. You know, Hannah Nuttall came to me as a 4:12 runner, you know.
It's mental. What was her 5K?
She's developed
15:20.
I don't think she'd even really done one at that point. She had done a steeple. But yeah, you know, I've obviously known Hannah her whole life. But I could see the potential that she had as a sort of athlete and person, in that you can see that sort of drive that somebody has. So I sort of had that background on her, I suppose, just from knowing her from her being a child. So, you know, it's just like having that sort of insight and knowledge about people gives you a sort of opportunity to pick someone who might not necessarily be the one that everyone's thinking is going to be the next big thing, but to be able to develop someone like that is great. And Elise Thorner as well is someone I years ago I used to sort of do steeplechase workshops for England Athletics.
Yeah.
So I was aware of all the steeplechases in the UK, and you know, it was a very, very small budget that we had, but we put a few workshops on, you know, with Luke Gern, Stuart Stokes, myself, you know, a couple of years, and just sort of, so I became more aware of who was doing the steeplechase. Obviously, I used to do that myself, so have an interest myself. So being aware of Elise, I said to her today, actually, I watched a race, the last English Girls that she did. And she said to me, oh yeah, you sent me mentioned me in a tweet, and I do not even remember it, but I must have put something like, oh, it's great to see, you know, the talent coming through. So like, there was something there, you know, there was a connection. Yeah. And when I heard that she was, you know, finished with uni, I sort of reached out to her. It wasn't through an agent or anything like that. I was like, I think this girl could be really good. So I was like, what are you doing after uni? And she, I knew at the time, I knew she was searching for a group and wondering what to do next. And luckily I got in there and sort of, we had a few conversations, and then, you know, it went from there really. So it was sort of, I feel like with them two in particular, that sort of knowledge and connection from, you know, having the, you know, experience of watching them through the age groups and stuff like that has helped me sort of see the potential in them.
Mm. And that recruitment process, I mean, it's something you've just alluded to there. You can't really force, can you? You can't just wake up one day and say, we need another 5K runner in this group. Who are we going to get?
No. And obviously when you're a branded group, that's a limit. You can't just go and ask anyone because somebody might already have a contract or have signed an NIL or things like that. So there's things that are in the way, but there's also things that are attractive about what we're doing, you know. So it's not as easy as just going seeing someone and going, they're great, let's just sign them up. There's more to it than that. And obviously any young athlete who's pretty good are getting snapped up by brands now. So you know, that's what where you've got to sort of be on it really. And obviously I'm Steve Vernon works at New Balance in the sort of athlete management sort of side of things, so he's obviously recruiting athletes for New Balance as a brand. And then hopefully if I see someone, I might go, what about this person? And he might do the same. So it's quite good to have someone of his experience as well in the background there, sort of selecting athletes for New Balance as well, not necessarily for the group but for the brand. So yeah, it's not as easy as I thought it would be, actually.
Well, I was going to say there must be quite a lot on the line for you, because if you stuck your neck out and you've gone, hey, look, you know, I think I've got a great athlete here in Elise, can we give her a contract? At that time when she joined the group, was she, I mean, you obviously thought she was worth it. She definitely is worth it when you look at her results now. But is it fair to say she would have been one of those people who are on the fence, and it would have been very easy for brand to not give her that chance, not give her the opportunity?
Yeah, I think probably she would have been signed by someone, if not us. But I think having the knowledge that I had of, like, you know, I even was a team coach at like under 23s for her, you know, so it's right. Like I've known her through various, I'm not saying we were like messaging each other or friends or anything, but I sort of always watched her for her results and stuff like that. I think you know, she was actively seeking a sponsorship deal, and I'm sure she would have got one, but I think she also wanted a situation of training environment, because you're coming from, you know, an amazing setup in university in America. And if you come home, it's not necessarily that easy to find an environment that's similar. So I think coming into the group where there was experienced athletes, you know, who she was seeing on a daily basis, really helped that transition from American uni, where you might get everything done for you, to where you're being a bit more independent, but also in a professional setup. And I think that was really good for her as well, just to have like Hannah to sort of see what she's doing or how she's fueling, you know, the pre-run stuff that they do, all that sort of thing, just to sort of see it on a daily basis, I think really helped develop her. And I think she would say that herself, you know, so her transition from uni to what we do, it, you know, went pretty smooth, to be honest. You know, it's like, it's a, if you're building up miles, which we did, things like that, it is a risk, isn't it? But because of this setup we have with the physio, massage, that side of things at the gym. I think it allowed her to make that transition quite well. And I think like the what you're seeing this year is year two of developing someone. You can't do everything at once. So like last year, we joke about it because she absolutely hates the gym. It's like a battle getting her in there. So last year it was like she was, as she would say, dilly-dallying in the gym. But I was like, look, we'll do this year. You're doing a little bit of gym. She was doing gym, but you could see there was so much potential there. Yeah. But like next year, when you've done a year of this, this has got to be the thing that, you know, it's like a no-brainer to me. This is how you're going to make a massive difference. I really worked hard this winter, doing a few different things in the gym, work with Chris Brammer, the physio, on sort of the gym programming for her. And I think that's one of the main reasons you're seeing such a massive improvement, because she's so much stronger. Her running's great. Her running was good last year, but I think that's improved more, but she's so much stronger. So she's just able in the steeplechase. That's so important, isn't it?
Yeah, do you think she's just coming off those barriers so much better because of that strength?
Yeah,
so she's always had the ability to run that fast, but
And we were talking about it yesterday. You know, it's like we're in an era now where the female steeplechasers have been steeplechasers from being 14. When I did the steeplechase, it was only just started in the world championships. I was 32 years old when I jumped over my first hurdle. You know, so you're getting someone who's a good flat runner trying to hurdle and being pretty rubbish at it, versus someone who's done it for right through school, right through all the age groups, and they are excellent, you know, hurdlers. This is why that, you know, it's no shock that people are running so much faster, because they've been steeplechasers their whole career. It's not just that's an opportunity. Shall we do the steeplechase? And I think that, you know, the women's event, it's showing, it's really showing, because the, you know, the girls are just phenomenal, and they're becoming more and more sort of better at, you know, technically better at the event, especially the Western girls who are sort of probably practice hurdling more than the East Africans, let's say. You know, it's very noticeable, and I think, you know, that's why we're seeing, you know, the European girls doing a bit better now.
Yeah, Europeans and Americans seem to be throwing the kitchen sink at it. They seem to have a massive list of women who can run 9:15 to 9:30, 9:25 in that sort of range. And we were actually having this discussion on the podcast the other day. It was after British Champs and after the size of the field in both the men's and the women's races, and how it's growing at English schools level. You look at the size, you know, how many people are racing at English schools now in the steeple. It is an event on
the up. It's brilliant. I mean, in the men's race the weekend it was an unreal race, wasn't it? It was so exciting to watch, you know. And I was sat on the back straight in the stand, and you know that not everybody there is a sort of fan of each discipline of athletics, but you could see there was an excitement building around that event. You know, I was watching it as a spectator, not as someone who's got an athlete in the race, you know, and I thought this is really cool, because I do think it is such a cool event to watch. And it's good that I feel like the last few years in the men's especially, we've had really good races, because the guys are just like wanting to run fast and trying to get the standards. And it's great. There's been a few lads who are around that sort of, you know, area that they can push each other to do that. You know, in Elise's race, I suppose it was, Stevie ran a great race, you know, massive PB for second there, and she actually got that race rolling. But, you know, to be able to sort of just front run the time that she ran is, you know, I think, you know, very exciting for her future, and what she can do, you know, what sort of time she can do.
Honestly, I think all it's going to take, not to put the pressure on Helen, but if people start seeing Brits medal at Europeans over the steeple, I think, you know, we're already seeing those youngsters try this event. That's the first step. And then now they're sort of committing to the event and actually really honing their skills. And if they then see Brits, you know, like Elise, I mean, Lizzie Bird did a fantastic job in sort of flying the flag. They see these Brits at the majors, you know, getting amongst that podium, battling in the final, because, you know, especially on the men's side, we're not seeing that in the 5K. We're not seeing it in the 10K. And that's where I've got to ask, Has there ever been a discussion with you and Westy? Because you look at a guy here who is obviously great over 5K, and when you look at the British men over 5K and 10K, yeah. And we are great, but we don't seem to have anyone, of course, George Mills, but who is really going to challenge right now, and it's going to take a little while before we see three or four
it
men.
It might take some convincing. Westy.
I imagine it does. I remember speaking to Westy years ago, and he was anti-steeple. He's an anti-steeple.
Yeah, I will say that he probably would be quite suited to it because he's quite a springy, bouncy runner.
He is.
I think they're the type of runners that sort of seem to be better at steeplechase. But yeah, I don't know that it, I think it would take some convincing, especially after Achilles surgery.
What we're seeing is definitely on the men's side is I think France have 8 men sub 8:20 right now. Their lifetime best. And that there's a world, and those guys are effectively 13:20 5K runners. You know, 13:20 used to qualify you 2 years ago. It got Westy to a European Championships, and now unfortunately, it's not going to get you to a European Championships this year.
Drop him a message. I'll see what he's like over the barriers. I totally agree with what you're saying. I think you know, and there's an opportunity in the steeplechase. It's not an easy event, and you know, anyone who's ever done it, it is a tough event. It's not to be underestimated. It's not just as easy as just going, oh, I'm going to wake up one morning and be able to run over all them hurdles and water jumps. I know, because I did that myself, you know, and totally disrespected it as an event. And when I was doing it, I did my first steeple was at Super Grand Prix in Doha. And, you know, in at the deep end, quite literally. And I set off thinking, oh, I think the British record at the time was like 9:52 or something.
Right.
It was, you know, it might have been 9:45. It was Hattie Dean era. And the first couple of K, I was like, oh, I'm going to smash a British record. And then it was like, bang, I was double footing, but all the water jumps and I just, the wheels fell off, you know. So I was like, okay, you can't disrespect this event. This is, you know, this is someone who'd like, you know, I'd been at all them champs prior to it, and you know, but it was tough. And obviously, technically, I wasn't amazing. I wasn't a natural thing for me. But you know, I do see, and it is one of them where you have to look at opportunities and what are your best opportunities. And that's what I did as an athlete, and it's what I will do for athletes who I help. It's like, what are your best opportunities to either go to a championships, get the best out of yourself, but you know, your potential as an athlete. Run fast times, win medals, then things, you know, it's like, what are your best opportunities? And I think you're silly if you don't investigate them and see what they are. You know, like Hannah came as a 1500 girl quite soon. She was like pushing the 5K narrative. And I probably would have waited a little bit longer, to be honest with you, because I do think she could probably run a decent 15, but you know, she was absolutely right. And you know, it's just sort of looking at your best opportunities, and in Britain, for her moving for the 5K was a no-brainer with the current crop of athletes that we've got, you know, and now she's, you know, eighth in the world at a world championships. So you know, I think that's what all athletes should do. It's like, what's your potential? Why not look at what you could do and where you're gonna, 'cause to me it's like, at this level of sort of pro athletics, it's about making teams. It's about being on start line at a major championships. And that's, you know, that's where you're going to get, you know, experiences that are going to be with you for the rest of your life, you know, that you're going to look back on. No one really remembers what time you ran, you know. But, you know, I think if you can be, you know, in the top 10 in a major champs, that's unbelievable in the current environment of athletics. It's so tough.
Yeah, I think athletes are almost too loyal to the event that they've done for X amount of years, aren't they?
Yeah. And I think I get it. You know, it's like Elise, I don't think she takes some convincing to seriously move to 5K, for example. But why would she? She's, you know, clearly can be one of the best in the world at this event, you know, as she develops. But, you know, if you're a flat runner, I think if you're a good 5K runner, you should be able to run a good 1500 anyway. Yeah. You should be able to run a good 3K. You probably can run a good 10K. You know, so it's like, you should be able to dabble in all of them things, and a lot of the best runners do.
No, they certainly do. Just on the steeplechase a little bit more then, before we move on, what's the difference between how Elise will train and Hannah will train? Like, when do you separate them out? Presumably they do quite a lot together.
They do a fair amount together, actually. There's only a few sessions where Elise might run over hurdles within a workout that will separate them. I mean, in this build-up, because Hannah had a few health issues when we were away, Hannah was doing quite a lot on her own, and Elise and Eloise were doing a few bits together. And, you know, so there was quite a bit sort of separation there, and specific work, I suppose, for Elise. And now, like today, they're back training together because Hannah's back in business. And, you know, so there's a lot that they can do together. And Elise doesn't run over hurdles in sessions every week, you know. So it might be that we'll do a flat session where her and Hannah will link up, and then next week she'll do something, some barriers within a session, but it won't be the whole session. It'll probably be a rep with Hannah, a rep on her own, that sort of thing. Do that quite a bit. But yeah, there's times where it's just like they have to separate. But, you know, probably on a Tuesday where we do sort of our thresholdy type work, they'll be together on that more often than not, you know. So yeah, quite a lot together, to be honest. But it works out, you know. That I think that's the training that works for Elise and Hannah. They're both quite similar in that respect, and they're both, you know, they train so well together. It's, you know, they're just like in rhythm together, and you know, it's a really lovely thing to watch, you know, them. They're not competitive, you know, they're just getting the work done and helping each other do that, which is really good.
Definitely. How, I've got to ask a little bit how you've sort of structured Hannah's year, or past few years even as well, because yeah, you really have produced one of our best 5,000 meter runners ever. And I feel like the 5,000 is an event that we have lots of interest, a lot of people partake in 5,000 meter running, but actually to really hit the big leagues and become elite and make those championships, it is extremely difficult. It almost seems like, you know, the classic, that sort of low 15 teens barrier, a lot of people can get there, and then beyond that becomes very, very difficult. Is it just the fact that you've created a very professional environment? You spoke about, you know, you've got professional, you've got a wider support team, you're traveling the world, you're going on those altitude camps, you've set up this group in a way that when you look to your right and left at a Diamond League, you're not out of place, you know, you've ticked all the same boxes everyone else has.
Yeah, I think that's got something to do with it. You know, and it's just a sort of year on year layering of things that you might add. In terms of how we structure it, the last few years, I suppose we've done an indoor season has been quite important. We've done an altitude camp in January and then gone into indoor season. And I feel like that's helped Hannah sort of build confidence as well as sort of run some really fast times. And that seems to have worked very well. And then we go back into training, get ready for the outdoor champs. It's nothing, you know, it's not rocket science what we're doing. It's quite what you'd expect. But I think it's just sort of the layers, you know, on top of the running of professionalism, like you say, the sort of gym programming, you know, we do gym twice a week. She does a solid program that's sort of specific to her. You know, has really good physio, has really good massage input, so we keep the bodies in a really good spot. Hannah's like a nutritionist anyway, so she's like on it with her refueling and how she sort of applies herself in that way. You know, so it's all them things. And I suppose, you know, she's developing a maturity as well. You know, she's 29 next week, you know, so she's now a very experienced athlete. So, you know, it's gone from probably when she came to the team, I'm like saying, this is what we're doing. Then, and maybe now we have a bit more. I'm like, what do you think about this? I'm thinking this, you know, we have a lot more of a conversation about things now as well, because she knows what she feels like. And it we do a lot on it, like, especially this last few months where she's had a few issues. It's day to day, right? What you think, how are you feeling? I'm thinking this, let's try this. If it doesn't feel good, let's pull it back and do this. You know, it's a very sort of reactive program at the moment. You know, I say I am quite a reactive coach anyway. I'm not someone who writes a plan, you know, 6 months in advance, because you obviously know where it's going. But if you write it too far, you're ripping it up every week, pretty much. So you're adapting to, you know, how they're feeling, how it's going, what they look like in the last session. Also, a race might get thrown into the equation that you didn't really know if they'd get in or not get in. And that's one of the big challenges that we've had, you know, is it's so hard getting in races. It's been a bit easier this year for Hannah and Elise. That, you know, it's made a big difference, but still not like, we're not getting the plan in April. You know, it's like, are you in it? You know, so that, you know, that's something that we've dealt with. Probably it's been harder in the past, but this year has been a bit easier. It's like getting in the races that you want to get in, and not sort of hanging around, am I in it or not? And, you know, sort of last minute sort of changing the plan and like, oh my God, I've done a hard session. And it's the race, I'm in this race now on Saturday, you know, it's like that sort of thing is challenging at this level. It really is, but it's just the way it is. It's the way it is. It's so hard getting in races. But yeah, that's been a massive thing that, you know, because of their results last year, that's been a bit easier. So that's helped with the planning.
Big relief. I mean, to be reactive as a coach, communication needs to be on point, doesn't it? It needs to be really just deep communication, like you say. You need to be having those regular conversations. Otherwise, you just can't be reactive because you haven't got the information needed to make that next decision.
Exactly, and I think that's why I actually, as much as being on camp for half a year is hard when you're a married person, I love that bit because I'm seeing them every day. I can see what they look like. I'm hearing things when they're warming up along what they're saying, you know. So you sort of, you're reading the room a little easier than if you're sort of just rocking up to the track and getting a snapshot of their life and then going home. Whereas like, you know, so camps give you that, you know, you see everything. And I think that's very valuable. And it helps me, you know, I like seeing people train. I like being face to face with people. I don't love sort of, when I first started coaching, I sort of dabbled in the online stuff. This just does not float my boat, you know. It's like, I want to see people. I used to do personal training because I like being, you know, seeing someone do their training and then say, what can we do better, you know? So I think, that's the sort of approach I have with them. And I think, you know, like you say, having that time, the time to spend with them, I know I'm in a very privileged position as a coach to have that, you know, and I think that's why we're getting the results that we're getting, is because we're living this life where we're, you know, all in.
I probably agree with that. And I think that's one that we were just speaking then about. A lot of people can get to that 15-20 level, or on the men's side, you know, your 13-30s. And then they get a bit stuck, and it probably is down to what you're alluding to there, that contact with their coach on a regular basis. When you look at anyone at that really elite level, it's obviously one, number one, what they put, where are they at, where's their environment? And then two is like, how involved is their coach?
Yeah. I mean, it's not for everyone, you know. Some people prefer to just, you know, be a lone wolf and do very well operating like that, and that's fine. But you know, that's how I prefer to coach, and hopefully the athletes that I coach prefer that environment as well.
Clearly. Hey, look, the standards keep coming crashing down. You must be, as an athlete yourself, you must be like, what the hell is going on?
I've made zero teams now.
I've got to ask as well, like, when you see those standards come crashing down and you see this drift towards world ranking points, how was that news received by you, but also when you go down the track on that Tuesday and you're probably all talking about it, how's it received?
Yeah, I mean, it's year on year this is happening in terms of the times that are the qualifying standards. I suppose in some respect, the new standards for next year we know that they're going to use the rankings more. So Great Britain, for example, have to do that. Yep. You know, in the past, it's been a little, you know, it's been a lot harder because we've not been allowed to be invited off that. You know, it's very, you know, it's like when Hannah missed the Olympic qualifying by like half a second and was invited and didn't get to go because we weren't inviting people. You know, thank God that has changed. So yes, the times are really, really hard. But every time these times get changed, people run them. They do. Everyone sort of ups their expectation of what's achievable, I suppose. But equally, we know that probably half of the people are going to come from the rankings. So then it changes the game a little bit. The guys that I coach have got the head around this ranking system way more than I have. And thank God we have agents that are on it with this as well. But yeah, you have to, you know, it's almost like, let's get the spreadsheets out, because we're going to, you know, there's some athletes are going to run the standards and some are going to have to tactically get in, you know, races. And just consider, is a Diamond League the best option, or do you try and go and win a, you know,
Gold Tour, Silver Tour, or Gold Tour,
or, you know, it's like, you know, so it's hard, but at least we know that you can get in via world rankings. What I don't like about it personally is that, what about the people, you know, what about the new kids on the block?
Yep.
You know, who've never run in any of these races. Are they going to come out in year one of knocking on the door of making teams and run a standard that's absolutely crazy? And then not be able to get in the races that they're required to get in to get the ranking points. I think that's quite unfair for up and coming athletes. We'll see how it works.
What's also unfair is the fact that the 3K and the 5K road are involved. Is that going to be the case going forward? I haven't quite read the small print, but for example, on world rankings for a 3K to have that much of an impact on a 5K or a road 5K to have that much of an impact as well. That seems a little wrong to me.
Yeah, and it's like, it means the indoors become even more, you know, if you're a 5K guy, you know, why the hell would you not go and run a 3K indoors and try and get something on the board in January, February, March?
Yeah.
You know, before you even get to the summer, so that you've got one of them, the criteria ticked, you know, because you can have a 3K on the you know, there's some, like you say, some of it where I think we're all a bit like, what do we have to do, and rereading it, you know, it's a bit of a minefield. But I think, yeah, we'll just have to get our heads around it.
There's an adjustment period for the athletes, of course, with everything moving on, everything getting quicker, but there's also an adjustment period for the coach. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you being a professional yourself, you were well aware with how you trained and also probably how other people around you trained. Now, you must set training sometimes when you write it down on paper. I mean, I do this a little bit, not coaching at the level you are, and I'll write a session down. I'll be thinking, bloody hell, that is hard work. But they go and do it. And you know, the game has moved on, and you must look at what these, you know, what the group's doing and be like, goodness me, like,
oh yeah,
I could do half of this.
I used to think I was quite good, and now I'm like, oh, absolutely rubbish. Now that, yeah, I think there's a lot of things we know now and things we do, you know, I don't set the program how I used to train. There's elements of influence of various things you've done as an athlete, let's say, and coaches that you've worked with or observed that come into play. And that's, you know, that's what we all do, isn't it, as coaches? But yeah, like, I'll write a session and I think sometimes I'm like, this is quite hard.
It's hard to judge, isn't it? Whether it's going to be too hard or just the right amount. Yeah.
Yeah. When I write training, I generally write between these times.
Yeah.
This being like unreal, this being like, that's absolutely fine. And that's sort of how we sort of get around it. For our hard sessions, you know, quite often we will move through the gears. Like, say you're doing a set of, you know, sets of reps.
Yeah.
First set will be at this end of the sort of target range. Last set will probably be at this end of the target range, you know. So it's like, that's how I do it. It's probably why they're, you know, quite good at rolling at the end of a race, you know, because we do quite a lot of that. But yeah, so yeah, I wouldn't necessarily expect the A time to be run through an entire session. And quite often we're quite satisfied with a solid workout, you know. It's not always sort of ridiculous. We very rarely are led on the floor, you know. It's not a lactic central, you know. But yeah, that's sort of how I look at it, you know. And I suppose you just got to sort of see what people can do and then push the boundaries a little bit without tipping over that red line. because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to just ride under it, aren't we?
Yeah, and I guess if you do some of those hard sessions, if you do just start a little slow, if they're not quite at it that day or the weather's not quite there, then it just gives them the freedom just to sort of stabilize a little bit and not, like you said, go way over that red line trying to hit those first few splits.
Yeah, exactly.
Mate, the championships are straight finals, aren't they? They're straight finals. I think Steeple some will have heats.
But Steeple is heats in the Euros.
Yeah.
But yeah, straight finals other than that. So
is that scary?
I think it...
Because you don't get to see, for someone like Hannah, for example, you don't get to have that heat where you can see the other athletes, how they're shaping up, how they look in the heat, and then you can sort of structure your final from there.
I suppose, yeah, there's an element of that, but I don't think she'll be just like, all right, bring it on.
Yeah.
You know, you're in it. I suppose that's one stress, less stress, isn't it? You know, you're in the final, and half the time when you're at champs, that's the worst bit, is the sort of preparations for the heats. Because they're cutthroat and always quite hard. So, you know, I think that's exciting. And especially with the champs being so close together, it gives it's not ridiculous to do both champs, you know, because you've got a straight final in the commies and then, you know, you're going however many days later to the Euros. It's not ridiculous. Whereas if you were doing heats finals on both, that would be probably, you know, it would be hard, it would definitely be doable, but it would be harder. So I think that's a good thing and it's good for the steeple as well, that the heats fine, there's only one round in the commies. So it means that we're back onto the recovery straight away, going into the Euros.
Yeah, and look, when Hannah and Elise and stuff were preparing, and even Andy as well, preparing for the Worlds last year, I imagine a lot of it was like, we've just got to continue to get in our best ever shape. Whereas this year, you're probably going into it going, actually, it's not all going to be about getting as fast as possible. It's going to be, can we adapt during the race? Can we, you know, hone in on that kick? So how's preparations, like, are you already starting to think about how these finals might look at commies and Euros? Or are you just very much still in the mindset, we need to get fitter, 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 like, let's just keep pushing it?
A little bit of both. Like, we're definitely, you know, Hannah especially, you know, she's going to get fitter. She's going to be in a good spot by the time it comes to champs, because she's probably a little bit behind where she normally would be. I see this as a blessing in disguise, because I think she's going to be absolutely great by the time we come to champs, you know, and obviously she ran really well at the weekend, but, you know, we're just building. So for her, it is a case of this camp we're doing at the moment, we're in Font Romeu at the moment, you know, this is a three and a half week block that is absolutely necessary. For Elise, that steeple at British Champs was her last steeple before champs. So, you know, it's just, and actually the last two races she's done have been pretty good practice. So the Diamond League, where she came second in Stockholm, you know, it was quite a rough race, you know, because the leader went off and then the girls were all together. It was tripping and pushing. The first K was horrible. And then it was like, right, can I push this on? And that's, I said, you know, straight away, I was like, this is like a championship race now, you know? So that was a good practice for her. British champs was a sort of, okay, can I break this group up? You know, can I get away? And, you know, so I think both of them races were actually quite good race prep for her. Because the LA race, she was on her own as well, you know, so she needs, you know, thank God she's done the Diamond League, where there's a bit of hustle and bustle, because it's going to be like that in the Euros, because there's going to be a lot of girls who are quite similar, you know, it's going to be tough. And Hannah's doing the London Diamond League 3000 metres. So we'll come down from here and she'll do that. So hopefully by then, you know, that'll be a great little last race before champs for her, just to sort of get her sharp and ready to go.
Well, look, I wish Hannah, I wish Elise, I wish Westy and Andy and the rest of the group, Eloise, all the best for summer, Helen. I mean, you're doing a terrific job, and it's great to see us have, you know, two. Could we come away with two medals at the Europeans in the steeple and in the 5K?
Let's hope.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for talking as always, and we'll see you soon. That was Helen Clitheroe, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed that one. I certainly did. I also want to take this time to shout out GoWod, who are supporting this episode. And it is the Stretching Mobility app, which is going to help you level up and professionalize your training. So often professionalizing in our sport is not necessarily just doing more on the track. It is actually take care of business off the track, and GoWod certainly allows you to do that. So do go and explore and see how it can benefit you. I'll catch up with you lot next week. We've got, several guest episodes coming while Lum is away, so I'm looking forward to them. And yeah, obviously, we'll be reviewing the Paris Diamond League, the London Diamond League, pre-classic and Monaco. These are, I've said them in the wrong order there, but effectively, they are the next four Diamond Leagues, which we are very much looking forward to. You should be too. So until then, have a great weekend and enjoy the Paris Diamond League, which is today, because we're back with a Sunday episode.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.